Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Karen Olsen Ramanujan. Olsen Ramanujan has a master's from the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. She is co-founder of the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute, and she teaches courses on sustainability and permaculture at Ithaca College. She also worked on and helps to maintain the permaculture garden at IC. She also started her own sustainability consulting business called Strategy, Education, and Ecological Design for Sustainability. And welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, we have to talk about this. You got your degree in environmental affairs and then went on to study permaculture. What got you interested in these issues and subjects?
I got my bachelor's degree, actually, in German studies with a minor in women's studies and was living in Germany doing translation, which sounded like this very kind of sexy job to get right after your BA. And I was literally sitting inside of an office all the time doing technical translation. And living in Germany back in the 90s, of course, they were way ahead of us ecologically.
Yep.
Got really interested in environmental issues, did my master's, and decided I wanted to live abroad. I wanted to do social economic development work, actually, in developing countries. And went to Africa after my master's degree was finished and came upon permaculture then through some friends.
Mm.
And it was one of those things where all the things that you already believe in are given kind of a structure, so everything finally makes sense.
Mm. Oh, well, how wonderful to discover that.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about permaculture, because it certainly is in everybody's mind in a different way, different mm-hmm. philosophies. Talk to us about what you have conceived of it.
So permaculture, the term, was coined by two men who are from Australia, Bill Mollison and David Holmgren. And Mollison was a professor with a long, interesting history of work behind him, working in fisheries, working as a baker, I've heard, and he was a wildlife ecologist. And he was working with a graduate student, David Holmgren, and they were looking at why do our agricultural systems degrade the environment so much?
Mm.
And asking that critical question, and this is back in the 70s, people were asking critical questions about, well, how could it be different? What could an agriculture that could be almost permanent in the sense that it wouldn't degrade the environment look like? And that's where they came up with the term permaculture. And over the years, it has really changed to include permanent culture, because it's very clear it doesn't matter how great your ecological design is. If the human systems aren't flourishing, then it all crumbles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people do think it just has to do with agriculture, but it also has to do with economics, education. Talk to us a little bit about how that has been integrated into this holistic philosophy about sustainability.
So, again, David Holmgren, I think, does a fantastic job of illustrating this. So if you go to his permacultureprinciples.com, I think it is, he has all kinds of wonderful visuals to illustrate this. I'll share my definition of permaculture, and I always encourage folks to come up with their own definition of
permaculture. Absolutely, absolutely. That's what's so great about it.
Right, because
there's
otherwise
freedom
you
within
don't
the definition.
Really
yep.
understand what it is if you can't mm-hmm. put it in your own terms. My current definition is it's an ethical system of design for meeting human needs across generations while regenerating the ecosystems in which we're embedded. Now, that's a lot to say, so I'll break it down a little bit. The ethics are earth care, people care, and the third one said in different ways, but fair share is often how it's said. So not only, you know, do I take my fair share, but there's also kind of a more radical way of saying it that I like better called redistribute the surplus. So that actually one of my ethics can be to design systems that are robust enough that there's a surplus that I can then redistribute to people who might not have access to resources. So that's where you start right away getting to social justice, to economics, whatnot. Also, I said across generations. You know, we have this very myopic culture right now where we're only planning for maybe the next year's economic forecast. And if we're looking at Earth time and the rate in which we're degrading our environment, we need a really different approach. So that's where I feel like the permaculture principles are a wide enough umbrella that folks can get underneath them without being prescriptive. I also would like to emphasize the systems part. So there's the ethics that are the core, and then Mollison and Holmgren looked at natural systems and how they work and distilled those down into very easy to apply permaculture principles. that work with nature. And of course, when you work with nature, you don't have pollution and waste and whatnot, and you don't have to rely on fossil fuels as much. So when you design with nature, you have more of a chance of creating not just a sustainable future. I feel like we have a mandate. I feel like I would love for there to be a mandate to go way past sustainability and actually aim for regenerating our ecological capital, our social capital, and have that be so robust that we can live off of the interest.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? I know. Do you feel like the permaculture movement, if we can call it that, because it seems to be permeating small communities like ours with, you know, local farms and share and so on. Do you feel that we have an urgency now because of climate change? And, you know, I mean, we are going to run out of resources. So now is the time, right?
Very much so. I think there is an urgency, you know, studying sustainability. One of the challenges when I teach college students about sustainability is I want to open their eyes to the maldesigned, really complicated systems that cause so many of the problems that we're running into.
So give us an example of what you mean.
The fact that our food travels thousands of miles to get to our plate, and that's not even, you know, where the most of the energy is consumed. Most of the energy is consumed with refrigeration and packaging afterwards. It's not a smart system in a world that has finite fossil fuels to fuel that system. One thing I love to do is to have students trace that one of their favorite gadgets, their iPhone, for example, from beginning, and look at all the materials and all the energy used to get that to their hand, and then trace it all the way to death. I mean, plastic doesn't even disintegrate, right? But like, what are all the impacts? And it's wonderful them to understand how interconnected those things are and all of the ripple effects. It's totally paralyzing. It gets a person at that, like, it's hopeless, and what can I do? That's why I love the design aspect of permaculture. So the design is that creative energy of, like, looking at what's here and who are the stakeholders, how do we marry those things into a vision of what's possible? One of my soapboxes is design thinking and systems thinking are the 21st century thinking skills. And so, yes, I believe it's urgent, and I believe that urgency can make us actually not think well.
Or it can make people become numbed out and,
right,
and paralyzed.
Or even fight or flight, and then we do crazy stuff. So really grounding in small and slow solutions is one of the permaculture principles. That's how nature works, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So local, robust, resilient solutions. Another thing we learned from systems is there are amplifying feedback loops. So think of bunnies mating, right? And like, without a predator, you just keep getting more, right? If there's infinite food source. Well, that's an amplifying feedback loop. We see a lot of those that are vicious spirals. I liken the industrial growth, right? That you always have to have a higher GDP and a higher economic output. There's no balances there. In nature, we have balancing feedback loops.
Yeah, and that seems to be accelerating in the 21st century for sure.
Yeah.
That need for, you know, the bottom line, more and more, and greed is the word we're looking for, I suppose.
Exactly. And so what we want to do as ecological designers, when you work with nature, you can actually create amplifying feedback loops that are virtuous. So if I create a local business that's building the ecological integrity of my region, that's creating jobs, that's helping people feel better about themselves and more secure, then they're better agents for change than if we're prey to whatever fracking company is coming through.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, going back to the fear of making people paralyzed and hopeless about the whole system that we've created, we can't let that happen, right? I mean, the small things people do make a difference. Recycling, composting, correct? And building their own little gardens in their yards, right?
Talk to us
about the small things.
So again, if we look at systems, small changes amplified throughout the whole system make huge impacts. So again, when I'm teaching students about sustainability, we talk a lot about culture change for sustainability. So one student, you know, they'll learn about bottled water and plastic bottles, and they'll say, I'm never going to buy a bottle again. And I'll say, yeah, but you know what? the bottling companies are getting keen to the fact that you college students are getting keen to the fact that you shouldn't be paying so much. They're now marketing to middle schoolers.
Exactly.
And then and then they're like, whoa. And so that's when they start to understand, oh, it's actually about the behavior change and how do we create cultures that are about not just conservation, but designing really good systems that work for people and work for the planet.
Yeah, that's, you know, I lived in the Netherlands in the early 1990s. You were talking about Germany, and I couldn't believe how far ahead they were. People had to bring their own bags to the grocery store, or they'd have to pay for bags. And when I came back, I thought, why aren't we doing that? Well, 20, 30 years later, we finally are. Why does it take us so long? Well, why do you suppose? You've lived in those countries. Why are they ahead of us? Is it because there isn't such a bottom line of capitalism and greed and more community?
Very good question. From what my friends in Germany told me then, they said, we just don't have that much room to throw stuff away.
Ah.
It's really expensive. I believe that idealism, like I'm super idealistic. I believe we can co-create a regenerative future. I believe that should be our mandate. And in my long and meandering career in permaculture, one of the things that I've learned in the most recently, I was actually looking into what would it look like if I became a sustainability consultant. And what blew my mind is, for all of the great work and all of the learning I've done around permaculture and all the good work that permaculture is doing in the world, I was privileged to learn something they call the Framework for Strategic Sustainable Development. It used to be called the Natural Step. And basically, it is a strategic planning tool for businesses or governments to move towards sustainability. We all know the science is in, actually, the triple bottom line. Strategic planning for a triple bottom line in a business makes a business more competitive, better returns. And I think that other countries, because they've had the political will to move forward on the sustainability initiatives, have captured a lot of the value of being on the cutting edge of that. I think that's what Germany has shown us.
Yeah, and the Netherlands, too, the places I've been. Does the permaculture movement need to move into the political arena and try to educate the political will, if we can call it that, and the people who are running things? Or is that too big of a step at this point?
That's a great question. You know, with permaculture, I see it as, again, this big umbrella folks can get underneath. I know folks who are Green Party candidates who are in permaculture and very active in politics. I know folks who are making big changes by working through their communities. And so I don't think there's any prescription there. I caution folks against what I call permavangelism, like permaculture will save the day. Mm-hmm. In the end, it's just a toolbox like anything else. What I do think I encourage everyone to do, I'll go back to the ethics. We just concluded the UN Decade of Education for Sustainable Development. And back in 2005, when that decade started, I did some research with one of my partnerships with Ithaca College and EcoVillage. We were looking at, what does character traits have to do with sustainability? What do ethics have to do with sustainability? And in their documents drafting out this next 10 years, they said, conversations around ethics have to be explicit if you're aiming for education for sustainable development, because that's where the rubber meets the road. So anybody can start having a conversation about, you know, I'm not so sure this thing I'm doing is really caring for the earth, or I'm not so sure my investments are caring for the people. And you start having those conversations, and then you take it to the boardroom, and then you take it, you know, there's so many ways to have those conversations. And again, we learn from systems thinking that one of the most powerful interventions we can make is in the mental models. Mental models give rise to our reality. And if our mental model is one of competition and scarcity and dog eat dog, then that's what we're going to get.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Karen Olsen Ramanujan. She's a co-founder of the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute, and she teaches courses on sustainability and permaculture at Ithaca College. Let's talk about the Permaculture Institute that you helped found. What was the original mission? How has it evolved? Tell us, and how has it integrated itself into our region?
Well, in 2005, Michael Burns and Steve Gabriel and I got together, and we wanted to start teaching permaculture courses. Permaculture is often delivered in a two-week intensive course, and folks emerge with a certificate, which gives them the ability to call themselves professionally a permaculture this, that, or the other thing, without infringing on the copyright of Mollison and Holmgren. Also, there was a great synergy that there was a very well-known Australian permaculturist coming through and was going to be here for a weekend. So we helped organize his weekend. We talked with him about what we wanted to do. He was like, you people, go for this. You need to not stop.
This is a perfect place.
It's such a great place. So much. There was no formal permaculture happening at that time. And I guess he saw that we were together enough that we, you know, would be able to pull it off. So that's, you know, 10 years ago, we've taught 12 of those certificate courses and many courses that we're calling now the community training in ecological design. And that's in response to the fact that not everybody can take off 2 weeks and pay tuition and camp out, and not everybody needs a certificate to be able to practice permaculture. So our newest model that was actually running right now, we're teaching in Ithaca through the New Roots School. They're hosting us, thanks to them. It's a very abbreviated. It's about half the curriculum, but all the design. And folks work on their own site. So it's a great chance for people to be in a learning community and move their permaculture design for their site forward boldly.
Wow, that's wonderful to know that. You see, you guys are changing the world. Very, very small steps, that's how you do it. Let's talk about one of the major issues on your agenda right now is also women in permaculture and helping women navigate this world. Talk to us about what you're doing.
Thank you. Well, I came to this topic, you know, like I said, I had a women's studies minor. I'm the mother of daughters. I've lived abroad. I always thought I'd work with women, but I didn't really know how. After working in permaculture about 8 years and just feeling like, wow, it's really hard to start a career that supports me. My husband has supported our family primarily. A lot of my work has been pro bono. And some things just felt hard. Now, I'm a go-getter. I make stuff happen. I've traveled abroad. I've had the privilege of doing those things and getting higher education. And I kept thinking, if it's this hard for me, is it hard for other folks? So I actually called up. I reached out to all the better-known permaculture women leaders in North America and didn't have enough time, actually, for my print deadline to reach further. I would have loved to. And just had conversations with them. Across the board, they said, it's hard. It's hard as a woman in permaculture. And it's hard for many reasons. But instead of accumulating all of the stories. What I didn't want to do, even though it's so valid and so important to hear the really egregious things that women have had to put up with, I decided to come up with what I called a pattern language for supporting women's leadership. And that fits in with permaculture because permaculture is very much into reading patterns in the landscape and whatnot. And so I wrote that article, did a lot of research, and I'll talk more about that research and why I think it's pertinent to all women and to this culture change that I really believe that we can do in a minute. I also collected best practices for supporting women's leadership. And so things I found out, when women are working in male-dominated fields, you know, it can feel like you work twice as hard for half the reward. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of this like internal self-questioning hamster wheel you can get on. Now, it wasn't until I came across this fantastic study in the social sciences by Dr. Virginia Vallian. She's part of the Gender Equity Project. She has these tutorials. I encourage anybody and everybody to get online and look up Gender Schema Tutorials. It's S-C-H-E-M-A. And basically, a gender schema is kind of a unconscious impression I have about how a man should act and how a woman should act. So women in male-dominated fields are measured against male characteristics for leadership, competence, those types of things.
That's across the board in this culture,
across
not just in permaculture.
The board. And her study specifically, we're looking at the STEM fields, so science, technology, engineering, and math, which is very relevant for permaculture because you're called to do a lot of, you know, to have competency in those fields quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So anything that emphasizes a woman's gender gives her a tiny minus point. Anything that emphasizes a man's gender gives him a tiny plus point. Mm, mm-hmm. Now, if we go back to systems, and Dr. Valian shows this in her studies, if we go back to systems, those tiny advantages, they actually did computer simulations, multiplied over many, many iterations. If you start the experiment with 50% women and 50% men in any computer simulation, and you have those tiny 1% variation in favor of men when you get to a promotional opportunity, over several iterations, you end up with 65 men in leadership.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Systems magnify changes.
Yeah. So to tell us what your initiative is that you're trying to do to change this and educate people and make a difference.
So, yes, my work is about daylighting this. You know, everyone's like, oh, there aren't enough women in leadership and there's the pay gap. Well, we need to look again at those mental models. We need to understand there are gender schemas, there is implicit bias, and this goes for all of the isms, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It does disadvantage women to men, and there's totally ways you can change it. Just the fact that a male colleague knows that this exists, a male colleague, now I have actually asked, based on this research, I've had conversations with my, by the way, amazing, totally supportive colleagues, always have been. Mm-hmm. I was able, because of that, to have a conversation with them and say, you know, I'm not going to do the work I usually do that is the caring for the group work in this teaching situation. I'm not going to remind people to check in with each other, to resolve conflicts. I'd like you to do that because it's an archetypically female thing to do.
Absolutely.
And then I look like I'm less technically competent. So we pay a lot of attention to who's teaching technical content, who's doing the caring work, who is helping, you know, if you're 2 weeks camping together, there's interpersonal stuff that comes up, you know, so they're as much in the game. So that's one thing, writing about it, talking with other women about it. Now, the other thing is looking at research that says women with our transformative leadership skills, which are about making institutions more transparent, more accountable, more ethical, also about reaching across differences for collaboration, getting disadvantaged groups to the table. These are actually the skills that are more pertinent and more needed in the 21st century. This is from the Harvard Business Review.
Oh, this is amazing. So just opening people's eyes to these facts and how it has, you know, affected our culture is a way to start making change, obviously.
Totally. It's changing the mindset. Now, I'm also supporting women's leadership specifically in permaculture, showing up at women's gatherings, having circles, having conversations. But as I said, one of my biggest learnings was that business, and I call it the B word because it feels like that to me. I'm shifting over to using the word entrepreneurship because entrepreneurship is you undertake an endeavor with full risk and benefit, right? So that's just is easier to swallow. I'm teaching women entrepreneurship, and I'm calling it socially conscious ecopreneurship. And it's specifically women who are already in the permaculture circles. So they're already about care for the earth, care for the people. They understand ecological design. And instead of all of us thinking we have to be permaculture designers or permaculture teachers, we're looking at where are the holes? You know, there's no childcare at permaculture design courses. Mm. So right away, that negatively impacts women and families. So helping women look at how they can create viable businesses that embody self-care, that stand in their values so they don't undercharge, that's a big problem
with
women.
Absolutely.
That they know how to actually promote themselves in a way that doesn't feel yucky. Promote each other is a wonderful thing we're really good at. And just create businesses that can then spawn other businesses that create what I call, and financial permaculture calls, a regenerative business ecosystem.
It's humanizing the business model. That seems to me the simple way of putting it, you know? And I think women are the only ones who can do that.
I think women are key. So I have a program now called Grow Your Permaculture Thrivelihood, and I'm offering it online. And the nicest compliment I've gotten in a long time was a woman who said, I've done a lot of business training. What's different about this is I get to show up with my whole humanity and be held to my greatness.
Wow. Wow. That is wonderful that you started that initiative. And I'm hoping we can see it flow into politics, because that is where so many of the decisions about our culture are made, you know. Tell us what you think permaculture will look like in the future.
That's a great question. I think it is going to be called less and less permaculture. I think the word permaculture is actually a barrier. People are like, what is that?
And that's true. The
right?
definitions
is it a cult?
Are. And it seems all varied. You know, a lot of people just think of gardening.
Right. And honestly, you know, my friends that are people of color, they're like, don't come into my community trying to teach us permaculture. They have wonderful initiatives that, you know, we can follow their lead and bring those concepts to service where needed. So one of the women in my program is African-American woman, loved being outside as a young person, but couldn't because it wasn't safe and her mom was a single mom and wanted to keep her protected. So she's now starting a business teaching people to make container, especially African-American women, to make container gardens on their balconies, because of course there's also access to land and, you know, urban soils aren't always the healthiest. But she's standing for food sovereignty through container food gardening. And I think that's what the revolution is going to look like.
Wow.
It's going to look about like social justice, win-wins, and co-creating that regenerative future.
Yeah, and people taking responsibility for themselves, and therefore the planet will be rejuvenated, hopefully, you know. I mean, we're almost out of time, Karen. Can you give some contact information so people can get in touch or find out about workshops?
You bet. So to reach me, my website is Seed Sustainability Consulting. There's only one S ever in that website. So seedsustainabilityconsulting.com. To reach the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute, it's fingerlakespermaculture.org. And I'd like to just briefly mention that we're doing our programming for this upcoming year differently. We're actually not offering another full certificate course. Instead, we have three advanced permaculture trainings. One's on building soils, one's on silviculture and agroforestry, and one's on water as a resource. We have some introductory permaculture trainings, a convergence and Finger Lakes tours, and even some popular education courses.
Well, I hope everybody will get in touch with you and find out, because this will enhance people's lives as well. It's not just a huge movement for the earth, although that's part of it too. Karen Olson Ramanujan, thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been talking to Karen Olson Ramanujan, and she is the co-founder of the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.